Welcome to the U.S. Hong Kong Business Insight Podcast, produced by the American Chamber of Commerce in Hong Kong. I'm your host, Margaret Liu. In this episode, we caught up with John Raisin, Group Head of Consulting, Santa Fe Relocation, on the key findings of the 10th edition of the Global Mobility Survey, the future trends of global mobility, and recommendations for companies looking to mobilize talent around the world. His piece of advice: think like a business leader and act like a global mobility professional. Hello, John. Welcome to the MCHAM Hong Kong podcast. We are delighted to have you with us today to share your insights on the 10th edition of the Global Mobility Survey. This has been 10 years. How has the global mobility business transformed in the past decade?
Hi. Hello, Margaret. It's interesting that I've been doing it for 10 years, and I was probably involved. I've been with Santa Fe 10 years, so the two, as you can see, go together. Very interesting that at the very start, it used to be very much around very tactical, operational focus on policies. And that's still important. But really, what we've done over the last 10 years is to evolve it into three areas, which is the role of mobility structurally, what do teams do? Then looking at some of the talent trends and how are people migrating and moving around differently. And the last one was really around risk and looking at the evolving complexity of compliance. If I sort of carry on, just to say that the things that I've seen change over the last 10 years, first of all, I think mobility used to be in many organizations, one team in a headquarters. And I think the evolution over the last 10 years has been more of a regional mobility approach. I mean, some companies go for local, but then you never really leverage scale, and it's everything's being done locally and you don't have a consistency. But certainly we're seeing a regional approach to team structures. However, when it comes to global tendering and looking for supply chain, generally speaking, headquarters still likes to have a say in what's going on. So that's number one. Number two, and this is something I've been talking about for years. I feel like a record that's got stuck. If although vinyl isn't really trendy anymore, but it's like a stuck record. But really, the role of mobility has changed. And if we look back probably before the survey, if you look at the work of Professor David Ulrich, the guy who was seen as the guru of HR in the 21st century, you know, he is the guy who was talking about having shared centers of service, centers of excellence, HR business partners. So structurally, mobility, HR used to be one team, and you used to do everything as generalists. Then over the period of time, you've now got this restructuring in a way that there's a different focus. And I think mobility, to some extent, was pushed into sort of a back office shared service function. And it didn't used to get out very much. And it was very it was seen to be a team that they move people, but we don't really know what they do. And the sort of skills that you need are very, very important, very critical. So I think it basically what I'm saying is that I think the role of mobility has evolved, that we talk about being more strategic and involved in strategic workforce planning. Now, that doesn't mean that mobility is replacing HR generalists. But if you're moving people around the world, it's very different from being somebody moving locally. And there are many different considerations. So I think increasingly over the last 10 years, the role of mobility has gone back to how it used to be before everything was put into boxes and sort of broken up. And in a way, mobility has come through to be more of a generalist role, but specialized in international HR mobility. Technology has become increasingly important to the function, as it has everywhere. You know, everything is digitized. And, you know, I can remember 10 years ago going to events and seeing the first of the tailor-made expat sort of systems, and everybody was going, "Ooh!" It was like seeing a new model. And clearly, over the last 10 years, there's been new entrants, new players into the relocation mobility industry, and increasingly technology. And as we know, we're working remotely, and with the pandemic, it will continue to play a major role. And you know, we've only scratched the surface with AI, and I sort of take my hat off and acknowledge the fantastic things of AI that's been done in Asia. You know, the some of the things are quite mind-blowing, but sometimes there's like a time lag between all the things that you could have as a common practice in industry to then get in there. And I reckon over the next 2 or 3 years, we'll start to see that. So that's really structurally. So structurally, the role has become more complicated, more advisory, more strategic. In terms of talent and people moving around, when I started, it was very much you had a long-term policy, a short-term policy, a commuter policy. What I think companies really figured out over the last 10 years is you really have to focus on the why. As management consultants, we often make things complicated. If you ask a three-year-old child, they say, why? And I think, and if you say to a manager, well, why are you moving that person from China to Malaysia? Why are you doing it? Why aren't you hiring somebody locally? And sometimes I think that that's been forgotten. People just become reactive and operational. And I think so mobility, in essence, has become the trend. The assignment types has become a lot more differentiated. So you have strategic assignments. You have developmental. So if you're, Margaret, if you're going to be a future leader, they might second you to the US for 2 years to develop different skills. And then effectively, you've also then got, so it's much more purpose driven. And then what we've also seen in that is the much more people taking control. I mean, it's interesting. I saw something from one of the tax firms who did an article about slashes. Have I got that right?
Slashers.
So I'm on point, right, with Hong Kong? Slashers. So I think what's also happened then is that the skills that you need today aren't the skills you needed yesterday, that talent is becoming more scarce, but that people are saying, well, actually, both of us are working, we've got families, and we've also got extended family. Do we really want to go and take a secondment from Hong Kong to New York? Are we going to actually be better off staying here working in China working with a company that's going to grow locally? You know, so people are taking control of their careers. The experience has to be linked to their career. It has to have a purpose, and that has reflected in the policies. And then to move on quickly, clearly what we've also seen is the traditional sort of you go somewhere for 3 years and come back and go somewhere else or leave and go and do something. That's changed. There's a lot more one-way international hiring going on, and I think that will continue. I also think if you look at the economies, this whole concept of West and East, for me, has disappeared, and it really is just emerging and emerged and evolving. And, you know, so I think that from a talent mobility perspective, there's going to be a lot more movement within Asia. Having said that, I think that as Asian organizations expand into mature markets in other parts of the world, and also maybe into Africa, which is still in many places emerging very quickly. The challenge there is that you have highly talented people, but their sort of socioeconomic infrastructures aren't always aligned with the growth and pace of industry. So hybrid working arrangements are going to actually be really important. And it's much more now than the other thing is the emergence again and core flex as a concept, you know, flexible packages for expatriates. That's become sort of trendy again. It started, the first time I saw it was 1998 when I worked for one of the big professional service firms. And it's gone in and out of fashion, because if you have well-crafted policies and you actually are able to be very clear why you're giving somebody an exception to policy, that you don't necessarily need to have a core flex program. Now, on the other hand, if you're trying to enable people to take choice like lifestyle choices themselves, then it is certainly a talent enabler. Of course, the administration and the equity, the danger is everything becomes an exception. And if there's nothing which is, everything becomes core and nothing is flex. So I think there's this balance between the employer and the employee. And as you were saying, that, you know, as people are taking more control of their careers, so organizations are having to work harder to attract the right people. The other thing I think we've seen is this whole thing about equality, diversion, and inclusion, ED&I, which if you look at most organizations' annual reports and their agenda and when they're talking about it publicly, is absolutely key. I guess the challenge for international mobility is that while some organizations have a joined up approach to that, I still think it's a work in progress. And in fact, if you look at the results of our most recent survey, that's just been published, it sort of went backwards. Now, you know, you're trying to help people with COVID problems and in the pandemic, you're trying to just keep people safe and healthy. So some of the reporting and some of the initiatives that I think the organizations wanted to put in place were taking a backward step. But I'll talk more about that as we move on. And then really things have just become more complex, you know, as people have got stuck in locations where they weren't supposed to be, whilst governments were giving a sort of holiday in terms of compliance for a while, they've now realized that actually from a revenue perspective, there's a lot of money floating around in undeclared tax where people have made a presence for work and therefore should be paying taxes. So the whole thing has become a lot more complex. You know, duty of care has gone right up the scale. One stage, everybody was saying, you know what, let's just have an app. Just do everything off of, and I know we all love an app, and I'm probably generationally, you know, have embraced it and used it myself. But I don't think you can just use an app to manage duty of care in this new pandemic world. There has to be a balance between human and digital. And that's where, you know, organizations need to be partnering with people like ourselves, where you are really giving people a personalized service whilst being effective in how you deliver it.
Yes, absolutely. A very good macro picture of the general trend that has evolved over the past decade. So let's dive in a little bit. How are this year's report findings different from the previous years?
There are a couple of key things, but I would say that with most things in mobility, it's been an evolution, not a revolution. Although the pandemic, I would say, was almost like putting an extra spurt into the process, and it's really been an accelerant. The thing that I think we've really noticed this year is the impact of, there's two things which surprised me. One is that if you look at the trends, the number of long-term assignments that people expect to be initiating has been consistently going down. You know, we don't need a three-year, we don't need a guy from London to go to Hong Kong for 3 years. We can do things differently. That's reversed. So whereas there was sort of a downward trend for long-term assignments, and it was much more commuters and short-term assignments, the whole thing's flipped. And I think that might be because last year, you know, only probably 40% of any assignments that were initiated actually happened. So is there like a sort of is there a waiting list? So is it kind of sort of bounding back from last year, and we're seeing an increase, and then it will level out again as business starts to sort of re-level. So that's the first thing. Obviously, cross-border remote working has become a bigger feature in this. The pandemic, the learnings from the pandemic, you know, do you know what? Only 9% of companies were ready for the pandemic. 9% out of 700 plus participants. I mean, that's quite scary, isn't it?
Yes.
Of course, the challenge is going to be, please God, it doesn't happen, but if it happened again, would that number change? And I would very much hope it would. So the second thing that really has come about then is around over the last 2 or 3 years, global mobility have been sucked into looking after international business travelers. You know, before it used to be, you go on a business trip, you go to the travel office, you get your tickets, you may or may not have needed a visa. If it's a business trip, you say, oh, I don't need a work visa because I'm on business. What's happened is that with all these sort of compliance issues around people being found to be working when they should be on a business trip, all of a sudden they say, oh, well, it's international, or it must be that mobility department. So whilst they've never had a control over it, all of a sudden mobility were being pushed to the front saying, well, come on, you do international, you need to sort this out. So not only were they doing a managed program of I don't know, 200 or 300 internationals, all of a sudden, the whole world has become something that they've had to be involved in. Now, if you then tip that into the pandemic and you add across borders, mobility now are really, I would say, I wouldn't say they're sinking, but they're certainly very stressed with too much work and too much responsibility, because people are now asking to, so you could ask to work, you might say, I don't want to stay where you are. I want to go and work in, I don't know, Indonesia. I fancy Indonesia. So as a domestic employee of your organization, you don't really come within the mobility remit, but all of a sudden, whereas mobility might have had 200 or 300 people that the team were looking after, you might be in an organization with 80,000 people, which is quite scary, isn't it? You know, it's quite a different ball game. And I think we had a webinar, in fact, I did a webinar yesterday on cross-border remote working and the compliance issues. And it was interesting how companies are having to be quite structured. First of all, what are the principles? What will we agree? What won't we agree? Once we figure that one out, what are the steps? What are the red lines that you can't cross if you want to work remotely? So I think those are the two biggest things. You know, the strategic partner was what I've been saying for years, and it's now really, because of the pandemic, the pandemic has pushed it into saying now we really do need you to be partnering with us. So I think that mobility has become, it's gone full circle. It's become a strategic player. It's no longer a back office technical function, but it's a bit like my, you know, having a boss that says, well, I want you to take on extra work, but by the way, you're still going to do all the work that you're doing already. So that's why mobility now are looking at their partners and their external partners and saying, well, we need people that will buddy up with us and be proactive. I need to trust you. Do I trust you? Can you do thinking for me? Can you come up with ideas? Can you not wait and me have to chase you to see what's going on? So that whole world has changed. So the supply chain and the roles. So mobility has to trust its partners more, and it then has to get more involved with the business.
COVID has certainly changed the way we work. As you just mentioned, more companies had to adopt remote working when the pandemic first hit. Will remote working remain in place in the future, even after COVID has subsided? Or do we see a new trend emerging? For example, hybrid working?
Right. That's interesting. Short answer is yes, it will. Basically, you know, something like 38% reported that they would be still seeing remote working. 41%, which was new into the survey this year, said that hybrid working will be part of the process. But as I said, what we've actually found is remote is not, and make this very clear, remote is not taking over from traditional mobility. People who are saying that are kidding themselves. Remote will be another type, and hybrid will be another form of mobility. It's all part of that talent toolkit that managers have available. And hybrid, I think, increasingly will become in play. And what that means is, so very quickly, so it's like I used to work 2 days a week in the office, or 3 days in the office and 2 days from home, or I'd be traveling. Now, I wasn't on a formalized program, but I think that will start to become a more formalized way for cross-border working. The challenge for cross-border working, of course, is it's not just a question of opening your laptop and starting to tap away at your computer, because you're creating a compliance presence. So hybrid arrangements will happen, but they need to be done within the construct of a compliance framework.
So speaking of compliance, what are some of the compliance considerations that companies should be mindful of when more workers opt for remote working or hybrid, a new arrangement working?
We partner with Crowe, the tax people, and the partner there I work with, we came up with 42 different things, 42 line items of things you need to think about. But in essence, the issues are going to be, let me just see. So if I go and work in another country, I mean, you don't have a presence there, am I creating a permanent establishment? So do you need to create an entity? Do you need to go and talk to a company that's an employer of record? And if it's a very big organization, do you need to become even a global employment organization? So you've got to be really clear that you've got to, do you have an entity? And the other thing is, you might say, well, actually, we do have an entity. The rules governing what you can do as a company in that country, the person coming in may be doing duties which are outside of your existing terms of reference. So you could still create a permanent establishment, even if you have an entity in a country. number one. Number two, immigration. I mean, high level immigration. Our immigration team have been so busy this year talking to people about this. Payroll. If you have got somebody working, how can you pay taxes? And if you don't have a company, then you can't pay taxes. Social security, pensions. And then there's country safety and security concerns. And last but not least, maybe it's not compliance, but you want to say, is this person a performer? Do we actually want to let them go and let them loose on working in another country if we're not really satisfied with their performance? So they're the major things, really. So it's entity, immigration, tax compliance, payroll. Is it a safe place for them to be? And also, do you really want them, you know, is the internet secure and is it safe? Depending on what you're working on, is it secure? And are they somebody who you'd want to keep, and are they a performer?
It sounds really complicated already. In light of that, will the global workforce become less mobile or more mobile under this new trend?
I think the answer is yes and yes. And I sounded like a politician there. What I mean by that is I still think that organizations will need to mobilize people. I think we're going to see a lot more international hiring. So hiring me to go and work in the Middle East, as an example. I think that companies will, over the next 2 or 3 years, start to figure out better, in a better way, who they will let work remotely and why. They will also, and I know from a friend of mine that he works in an organization, they've got 80,000 people. Last week, they found 400 people who were supposed to be working in a home country, and they were logging in from countries where they were banned. But their manager didn't know where they were. So I think that we will see more mobility, remote working, but I do think there's going to be much more smarter compliance processes put in place. So it's not going to stop. Mobility still needs to happen. You know, you still need to grow markets. I can't grow a market in South America sitting at home in England. I have to be in country. Now, if I'm a professional services worker and I'm working on professional services, then I can work remotely. If I'm working on IT, I can work remotely. So I think it depends on the sector that you're working in.
And perhaps maybe it also depends on the region, because here in Hong Kong, many of the expats actually are leaving the city because of the strict COVID-19 measures. They have to undergo at least 3 weeks quarantine upon returning to Hong Kong from their countries like the UK or the US. So this is an interesting trend to look out in the future.
And just to very quickly say on that, and I'm conscious for time, but it's interesting that one thing we talked about was we're also with business travelers. If you've got somebody that, say, commutes every week from one country to another, and you've got these issues, barriers, COVID waiting times, if you like, shouldn't you be better planning your time and say, well, rather than me going backwards and forwards, maybe I should spend 3 months there rather than do weekly trips? So I think people need to be, to your point around the timelines, people need to be rethinking the why and the how and the what, so that they are more effective and say, yes, we can't get back in, or we're going to go into isolation for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So we're going to do more time out so that when we do come back, we can still be effective. So I think time management is going to become more important.
Yes, certainly. In addition to compliance considerations, employees' well-being and mental health are equally important. What are some of the recommendations that global mobility professionals should advise organizations to do?
Well, first of all, they've got to make sure that they understand the full context. First of all, I think the selection process, come back to the who, the what, and the why again, is the why are people moving? Then what's the process for selecting somebody to go? Understanding a better picture of the circumstances of the individual and their family. Now, you know, there's this thing about GDPR and not knowing what people's data. For me, if you're going to work internationally, it's very different from working domestically. So you've got to know much more about the individual, and mobility need to make sure that they fully understand what's going on. You can't afford to say, oh, we didn't know about that situation if they're stuck in a country. So do your homework up front, the due diligence. Then secondly, look at where they're going to go to, and make sure that your relocation partner is really going to, is number one, understands the brief as to what's going to happen, that you can allay the concerns of the family, that you can actually make sure that from a pandemic perspective, it follows all the protocols, that if there's issues at home, that they know what the process is to manage those expectations. So I guess what I'm saying is it's about having a proactive approach where you're asking all the right questions, and that you have protocols in place that if something goes wrong, as I always say, I love to have a plan B. So it's being proactive, have partners that can help you, and select the right people. I can't tell you the number of people that I've seen over the years who get chosen because they happen to be around, and it's the quickest thing to do, which in the long term can be the worst solution.
As we head into 2022, what would be the top trends that we should be watching in the next 12 months?
Increasing use of digitization, increasing use of technology. I think the pandemic is going to its next phase. I think remote working will evolve, but I think it will settle down in terms of the balance and the protocols, I think, will be stronger. I think we are going to see surges in migration again. I think that there will be talent hotspots, and some industries are. I know, again, my friend's sector, they had 3,000 vacancies in one country, 3,000, and they can't get people. So I think there's going to be a lot more innovative approaches to talent management, attracting people, and mobility can play a role in that. In that, if I've got a choice of working in three countries in Asia, then how we will look after you, manage that process to move you, so mobility become part of the recruitment process. In terms of other trends, I think the hybrid working will increase, and I think that compliance will continue to play a heavy toll, and that companies will be caught out by people being found out that they're working in the wrong place, and there will be fines and charges on tax for permanent establishment. So companies will start to be smarter about managing compliance. It's managed compliance. Talent will still mobilise, but I think it's going to be challenging. The cost effectiveness, managing costs, becoming more effective, and really focusing on developing future leaders. Because I think development of future leaders has been put on the back burner because of the pandemic, and that organisations are going to be in a scrabble to attract and hire and develop the best in the sector.
And finally, what will be the most challenging factors to mobilize talent in the year ahead?
I think it's getting people to move, if I'm really honest. You know, I think as some people love to move, but if you're trying to attract a family to up sticks and move somewhere else and go to another part of the world, I think attracting people to mobilize and persuading people to mobilize, given what's happened, giving them the assurances, and also how it fits into their career. So that's why I think organizations need to be well-structured, thoughtful mobility, planned mobility, and leveraging the whole supply chain to make it an experience that is good for somebody. You know, if you and I go and move to somewhere and we have a bad experience and we were already worried, the chances are we're going to say, you know what, I think I'll go back to where I came from. So I think that's the biggest challenge.
And that is why there's no better time to be a global mobility professional than now.
I have to tell you, I mean, as you can gather, I've not just left school. I'm a little bit older than that. I wish I was 20 years younger and was in mobility now, because mobility are going to become the rock stars in the HR world, if I can say that. They're going to become the superstars, because the bandwidth of what they have to do, the scope is enormous. The board of directors now know who they are. Before, they were a back office function. Now everybody knows who mobility is, and everybody wants a piece of them. But you have to have the metrics and data and be commercial and financial. You can no longer just talk about technical things. You have to think like a business leader and act like a mobility person.
Great. And on that note, thank you very much again, John, for sharing insights.
My pleasure. Thank you.